Corn was first domesticated in Mexico between 4,500 and 7,000 years ago along the 18th parallel. It was flint corn. Somewhere around 1,000 BC, retired corn breeder Forrest Troyer says this early corn was moved into the area we now know as New Mexico and Arizona.
And then the dent corn came in after Columbus, probably Cortez, when he went to Tampa Bay, when he went to Tampa Bay, probably brought the first dent corn to the United States.
The critical thing about these two moves was that the corn, flint, and dent had to be adapted to longer days and cooler, shorter seasons. Now, dent has also been developed in Mexico, but much later than flint, probably about 1500 BC, says Troyer. So flint corn came into the southwestern part of the United States, and dent corn traveled much later into the eastern U.S. Dent corn was superior to flint in almost every respect. The kernels were larger and the yields were greater. Soon enough, European settlers in the New World recognized the two different kinds of corn were related and could be crossed.
And the flints were the source of earlier maturity that was needed, and the dents were the source of higher yield and also better feeding traits. So some number of people Virginia and in Tennessee and Kentucky crossed flint by dents to develop varieties.
Generally, says Troyer, it is estimated that by the time most of the United States had been settled, in the 1840s, about 250 different varieties of dent/flint crosses had been developed. The Corn Belt, at that time, still hadn't made its way northward. The prime growing states were Virginia, Kentucky, and Tennessee.
And the reason for that is that the land grants from the Revolutionary War from Virginia, the state of Virginia, and also the land grants that were issued to veterans of the Mexican War were virtually all in that area. There was a small area in southern Ohio on the Scioto River, but there were two areas in Tennessee and there's two areas in Kentucky, and of course the corn in Virginia was already there. I mean, you know that they had already worked with it before the movement west started.
It is the combination of what American Indians did in bringing flint corn north into the U.S. and what European settlers did with dent corn on the East Coast that has resulted in the hybrids grown today by farmers in the new Corn Belt: Nebraska, Iowa, Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. As farmers settled those states, they brought the 250 dent-flint crosses northwestward with them. Those open-pollinated crosses, the dent-flint combinations, were quickly adapted to the growing conditions of the Midwest. In the 1840s, there were about 250 varieties of corn. They originated in Virginia, Tennessee, and Kentucky. Now, as farmers in these states began their movement north and westward into Indiana, Illinois, and Iowa, they brought those crosses with them. 40 years later, in the 1880s, these producers had adapted the 250 varieties to the local conditions in the states across the Midwest. It resulted in 1,000 locally adapted open-pollinated varieties of corn. In 1888, Iowa, for the first time ever, raised more corn than any other state in the Union. The extra 750 varieties of open-pollinated corn, says retired corn breeder Forrest Troyer, were more drought-tolerant and shorter-seasoned than the original 250.
Out of those 1,000 varieties, I don't know the exact number, but there were probably 20 or 30 varieties that were grown much more than the others. One thing that contributed to that was the corn shows.
One of the most popular varieties was called Limming. It was developed about 40 or 50 miles northeast of Cincinnati, Ohio, in Wilmington, and had won a corn show in Paris, France. It was the first widely adapted variety of yellow corn. Half of all the yellow corn grown in the U.S. was at one time Limming corn. It actually represented just one quarter of the total U.S. corn crop, because 50% of the corn grown in the mid-1800s was white dent corn, not yellow dent corn. Well, the next big variety was to become the foundation of almost all of today's hybrid corn. It was called Reed's Yellow Dent. Troyer says Robert Reed developed the variety by accident when he moved from Russellville, Ohio to Delavan, Illinois. In that first year, he planted and saved back seed from a variety called Gordon Hopkins corn. It had been planted late in the season. The following spring, he planted the Gordon Hopkins corn again.
He didn't run a germination test, and he got a field of corn where the stand was too good to tear up, but it wasn't as good as it should be. So he went in and he hand-planted what they called a common early yellow flint that was grown in the area. And because the early corn was planted later, they crossed. And then over a period of, at least 40 years, Robert Reed and then later James Reed selected Reed's Yellow Dent.
It became very popular after winning the corn show at the Chicago Columbian Exposition. Troyer says because of the win, farmers oftentimes called Reed's Yellow Dent World's Fair Corn. A Perry Holden, head of the agronomy department at the University of Illinois, evangelized Reed's Yellow Dent, and he convinced the Funk brothers of Bloomington, Illinois, to start producing and selling Reed's Yellow Dent. Holden later took a position at Iowa State University and took 600 bushels of Reed's Yellow Dent with him. Troyer says some Iowa seedsmen were not very happy about the introduction of an Illinois corn in their state.
It soon replaced a lot of the varieties that were formerly in Iowa.
Reed's Yellow Dent and livestock feeding trial studies from the University of Wisconsin and Purdue are the major reasons U.S. corn farmers abandoned white corn. By the way, most of the 1,000 original pollinated varieties developed and grown in the Midwest were white corn. The university studies proved pigs grew faster when they ate yellow corn. It was because yellow corn provided a good source of vitamin A, and white corn did not. This one attribute, vitamin A, eliminated the majority of the genetic material farmers and corn breeders would work with to develop hybrid corn in the 1920s and 30s. In the 1920s, U.S. corn farmers were still planting open-pollinated corn. About 1,000 genetically different varieties existed, and most of them were white dent corn. A few were high-yielding yellow dent varieties. They were popular throughout the Corn Belt and became even more so when swine feeding trial studies proved hogs did better eating yellow corn because it contained vitamin A. A Reed's Yellow Dent was the most popular open-pollinated corn variety in states like Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, and Iowa. But the farther north you went, the less tolerant it was of the shorter, drier growing season. Well, the University of Minnesota went to work on the problem and solved it with a yellow dent corn called Minnesota 13. These two varieties, says Forrest Troyer, set the stage for the development of hybrid corn. By 1920, the double-cross hybrid method had been developed by Donald Jones. Still, it remained difficult to find four inbreds good enough to make a double-cross to sell. Henry Wallace, who founded the Pioneer Seed Company in Iowa, sold the first double-cross hybrid in 1924. It was called Copper Cross. It wasn't until 10 years later, in 1934, that hybrid corn varieties even made a dent in U.S. corn production. Forrest Troyer says that year, 0.3% of all corn sold for seed in the U.S. was a hybrid.
And Iowa was the fastest growing, partly because of the work that the editorials that Henry Wallace wrote for Wallace's Farmer. And by World War II, by 1941, 1942, I believe 90% of the corn in Iowa was hybrid, and the rest of the Corn Belt wasn't far behind. Just a few more years, you know, that they it was an amazing thing once it got going. It was quickly accepted.
In 1934, that 0.3% of hybrid seed sold in the U.S. came primarily from two companies, Pioneer and the Funk Brothers Seed Company of Bloomington, Illinois. In 1935, Troyer says the first Ag Experiment Station hybrid was introduced, U.S. 13. A year later, Iowa 939 was released. In those early years of hybridization of corn, it was thought farmers would buy the original material and then produce their own hybrids. That's how open-pollinated crosses had been adapted throughout the Midwest, but the model didn't work for hybrid corn. So the corn seed companies prospered. Pioneer and Funk, along with DeKalb, were the three largest. These three companies and the experiment stations used the available open-cross yellow-dent corn to develop their hybrids. It was at this point that the majority of the genetic diversification of the domesticated corn plant was lost. Today's hybrid corn comes from about 8 genetically different open-pollinated yellow-dent corn lines. They include Lemming, Lancaster, Reed's Yellow Dent, Minnesota 13, Northwestern Dent, Funk's Yellow Dent, and Troyer's Reed, along with 176A.
But over time, the thing that happened is that those inbreds that came from those popular varieties became the backbone of the hybrid seed corn industry. And what it really amounted to, as more emphasis was put on white adaptation of the hybrids, the inbreds from the varieties that did well over a more widely adapted area came to the forefront, and they're the the backbone of the hybrid seed corn industry today.
Today, Forest Royer says half of the seed corn sold can trace its heritage to Reed Yellow Dent. Another 20% is directly related to Lemming, Lancaster, Minnesota 13, and Northwestern Dent. It's a narrow genetic base from which to work. He says it confines the ability of corn breeders to continue improving Yellow Dent corn. And in a world which is expected to grow by 4 billion people in the next 30 years, that could be a problem. If you think about it, says Forest Royer, the corn plant has been moved northward more than half a continent. The genetic pool from which it evolved has been sliced and diced by farmers and breeders in North America for about 3,000 years. Most of the selection pressure has come in the last 200 years when the gene pool was divided 1,000 ways, and then more than 99% of those crosses were eliminated. That leaves a very small domesticated gene pool from which corn breeders can draw to improve the crop. Troyer says it is vital, then, that the geneticist and corn breeders understand how that pool was narrowed. He suggests they start by reading the works of Charles Darwin.
Darwin's advice was to study the plant, to look at it sharply, to relate what you're seeing to the information that you've learned about botany, about how a plant works, and then through that, decide what it needs to do better. Adaptation is the critical thing. Adaptation is the sole driving force as far as biological evolution is concerned. It's what makes everything happen. And so it makes all the sense in the world to think in terms of how can I make this plant better adapted to get higher yielding, more reliable corns.
The second notion Troyer says corn breeders should think about is the importance of wide adaptation. He says weather is the reason hybrid corn breeders narrowed the gene pool early in the 20th century. It was easier to market and grow a corn which could adapt to widely variable weather conditions.
I think most farmers understand that maybe better than most plant breeders. And so wide adaptation is a very important trait. We can select for this by having more test locations, but by looking the things that don't jump around so much at different locations and different seasons, you know, very high yielding here, very low yielding over here, and so forth. We want those ones that can take the give and take that the environment puts out.
After understanding the relationship of weather to the crop and how it was used to widely adapt the corn plant across the U.S., Troyer believes today's and tomorrow's corn plant breeders will be better able to pinpoint the genetic differences, which could result in an improvement. He also says the gene pool could be expanded by looking into the old crosses and the wild relatives of the corn plant, or by altering it with genes from another organism. To him, the science remains only the science if it is addressed cautiously. In that caution, the world could find another green revolution. I'm Todd Gleason.